This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
It is indeed. Carol Lawrence is away of Red Arrow fame. She'll be back Monday to co-host with me on Food for Thought 107.7 The Pulse, WTPL, presentation of Casey's Rib Shack, famous Hickory Smoked award-winning Southern Pit Barbecue on 2nd Street in Manchester, and Grasshopper's Garden Center, where the customer comes first, 728 North River Road in New Boston. So there's your Food for Thought sponsors. And I do want to remind you, fundraiser tomorrow is going on. It's the Bryce Strong Family Fun Day and Benefit. Young boy, 10 years old, Bryce Haynes, diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma back in April. Originally treated at Concord Hospital, now at Children's Hospital at Dartmouth, Chad. And so the bills are racking up, and the family certainly could use a little help. Now, the event, which is happening downtown from 11 until 4 tomorrow, is free. But they would certainly appreciate a donation if you could. There'll be all kinds of stuff for the kids. A really fun day. Again, it's at Eagle Square Park, One Eagle Square in Concord, right downtown on the side of the road that is finished as far as all the reclamation of the whole downtown area. So if you can, tomorrow, Bryce Strong Family Fun Day, the Pulse getting behind that one. Chef Patrick Hall is here.
Hello.
Lakes Region Community College. He is a director of culinary studies there. Good to have you, Chef.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. You know,
You're very welcome.
You know, I love doing this.
Yeah, I know you do. You like being with people.
I do.
You like teaching.
I like to chat, you know, so.
Yesterday was what, registration or orientation?
Yeah, it was orientation day. Mm-hmm. So I got a whole group of new students that came in, and we registered them up, and we're going to be ready and going for September. So,
Chef Hall is good enough to, he's going to make about 5 or 6 pounds of cheddar cheese for me.
As a matter of fact, I got them already ready for
you. Oh, you do?
Yes, because I brought some samples of the stuff that I had in.
Yeah.
So these ones that I have 2 blocks of that. Mm-hmm. That cheddar that I gave you last week was probably about 3 pounds.
Okay.
You know, and so I have 2 more blocks of that.
Fabulous.
That I had it. So I said, you know what? Why am I going to make more? I said, I'll just give them this, and it's already aging. So one's Gouda, and then one's also cheddar.
One's Gouda? Oh,
yes.
Love it, because I do a blend of 3 or 4 different cheeses.
I remember you said that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be perfect for you.
Early January.
So. Absolutely.
Mac
even
and
better by then.
Off.
Absolutely.
So. I love that. Well, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Have you met our third person in the studio yet?
I just barely did, but you know, it was great. You know, I love meeting new people.
This is Kath Palmer, who is the life and food editor of the Nashua Telegraph, with which I have been affiliated now for, well, it'll be 11 years next week. And about half the time you have been my editor.
I have.
And you get to read all the crap that I send down every other week.
Oh, you're a delight.
I just try to get it to you on time. I don't know how many other...
You're definitely at the top of the list for punctuality on that. So
good thing you don't edit anything I write. You'll be there for hours.
Oh, man. So sometimes if I need a judge or somebody to be a part of a food event, because Kath is fun and she knows her stuff and she's really great to have around, I give her a call. So I thought, you know what? I wonder if she would like to be on the radio.
She would love to be on the radio. She has the face for radio. I don't mess up my hair with headphones for just anybody, Mike. So,
so you've been how long? 5, 6 years?
It feels like it, but no, it's actually been 3 years that I have been the arts and entertainment food and wine editor.
Food and wine editor.
For Encore section of the Telegraph.
Yes.
Every Thursday.
Every Thursday.
Pick one up.
How often are you actually out in the field sampling things, or does it come to you?
In the field.
In the field,
geez, 3-4 times a month I've got stuff to do. I do restaurant reviews, and I go to food events. I just went to a wine pairing dinner at the Crown Plaza in Nashua last night.
Oh, wow.
It was fantastic.
Wow.
So, yeah, I get to go to those things. I get to do the fundraisers that we do, like the food judging we did for
the
senior center.
Right.
And, yeah, it's a fun job, but I've been there 3 years, and I gained 20 pounds the first 2 consecutive years. So the third year, I decided it was time to join Weight Watchers and compensate for my
Have you ever rated the food
job?
Of Weight Watchers? I mean, I know you're a restaurant critic and such, but that would be kind of a fun column to do.
Oh gosh. I don't eat boxed foods, but I do compensate in my day-to-day life by eating sticks and twigs.
I love doing Slim Fast. The shakes there, a couple scoops of ice cream, it's awesome. I mean, it's really good, you know, so.
My brother used to say that, I love these Weight Watchers frozen entrees. Two or three of them make a great meal.
Put them all together. Yeah, I got stuck on the Weight Watchers there one time, and like I said, it's just those little meals, and you
20 points a day or something.
The only thing is that they need seasoning. You know, is what I always find with those. I'm not. I always put tons of salt on them, so it's like it's okay. We're dieting, but then all of a sudden, I'm having a heart attack from the salt.
Exactly.
You know. So
speaking of salt, I actually did a study through Brigham and Women's Hospital last winter for blood pressure and how sodium affects it. Because I'm kind of borderline, and I never really believed I had high blood pressure. So I went in for it was like a month long study, and for one of the weeks they.
I wrote an article about that.
You're right. And so they prepared every meal for me for one whole week. I had to go down twice a week and pick it up, you know, in the hospital section, the medical section of Boston. And the first week, there was absolutely no sodium.
Okay.
I mean, it was just extremely bland. And some of the stuff was okay, you know. I mean, they gave me salt-free potato chips, so I struck up that compromise. I said, all right, that's fine. And oranges and peanuts and everything was portioned out and weighed to the kilogram. The following week, I got to eat whatever I want. Plus, I had to eat two packets of soup sodium, you know, that comes in the foil packs.
Oh, really?
I had to stir it up in water like it was, you know, Metamucil to get the extra sodium so that they could see what the comparison was week to week.
They measure the spikes inside your blood
and everything? Yeah, but there were none.
Really?
I mean, my blood pressure was incredible. And even during the week when I was, you know, shoving that god-awful soup sodium down my throat, I was fine. So it appears that I don't have a sensitivity to sodium.
It's funny because you know you season with salt, but the other thing is MSG. You know, people always say, "Oh, is this MSG?" You know, and it's so bad for you, but it tastes so good. I'm telling you.
Speaking of Chinese, do you have a favorite Chinese place in southern New Hampshire, Kath?
Chinese specifically? Well, I mean, I'm more of a Japanese Thai gal.
Okay.
Chinese food, I would have to go with Lilac Blossom.
I was thinking you would say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been there. Very
I've
good.
I've been there.
And nice atmosphere and the tablecloths and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Which linens kind of dresses
it's
it
kind
up.
Kind of the go-to like family event, you know, for the crosses generations.
Yes.
Everyone likes the Lilac Blossom. So
yeah. I wish. Well, I don't wish. And I should admit because I don't eat too many franchised restaurants, but I do love P.F. Chang.
Oh, yes.
Oh, well, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, you mentioned MSG, and
I'm with you, P.F. Chang. Their stuff is really, really good. You know, like I'm with you, too, as far as, like, chain restaurants, but that's one, you know, that
I
go to Boston, I do go there, you know, so my wife loves it, and they serve these margaritas one time. It was a key lime margarita, and they put graham cracker around the rim.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they crushed it up and they dipped it in there. So you're eating the key lime. So my wife would get those and I tried them and they're fantastic. It's like having a key lime pie in it.
I will remember that.
That's cool.
Their lettuce wraps as an appetizer are off the charts.
Yeah.
Have you had those, Kath?
I've gone to P.F. Chang's in Arizona and in Vegas. I haven't been down to Boston, but I mean, they're just, even the place is beautiful. I mean, just being there is lovely and the misters are going because you're outside and, you know, these extreme weather situations and stuff.
I've been to the one in Vegas.
Yeah.
Left my credit card there. But they had it. I got it the next day. I canceled it already, but I just went and picked it up. But
I've been to the one in Boston.
There's one in Peabody.
Unfortunately, it was after we went to the beer fest and we're trying to climb the horse afterwards. So,
You know, you mentioned margarita, which this might be kind of a diversion, but that reminds me of spicy kind of Mexican flavors. And last night at the wine pairing dinner at the Crown Plaza, the guest wine expert was Rob McDonald from a vineyard out in Napa Valley called Art Farm Winery. And it's art with a plus sign wine, if you look it up. And he brought a white wine that he had infused with jalapeno.
Yum.
And it smells like a jar of jalapeno juice.
Yeah.
It's really strong nose, but it was really different. And then he brought another one that he made a pot of coffee with a Merlot instead of water in the machine.
Oh, my.
He put Merlot in.
Oh, no kidding.
So it was coffee made with Merlot.
How was that?
And then he took that and he kind of messed around with it and he has created this coffee-flavored red wine. It was fantastic.
Really?
It smells great.
And it's
it
hot?
Tastes great.
Comes out hot, or do you drink it
No,
iced?
You drink it cold. Yeah.
Okay.
And he cold brews
yep.
it, too.
Yep.
And it was just really unique stuff that was... Really delicious.
I love stuff I was talking about the beer fest, and we had a jalapeno beer there, and we were drinking, but it gets very spicy, is what I found out. And I don't know, I can't imagine wine. I always think about, I'm a beer guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I love wine, but it hurts my teeth sometimes. I think that the tannins
really?
Or whatever. Yeah, it's weird. If
you
I
have
can
a
drink
tannin
it,
sensitivity?
Yeah, it's like the back of my teeth.
Wow.
And then it
well,
just
yeah, it
hurts.
Depends on the wine that you get, I would think. I mean, and actually that coffee one, he actually... used fresh jalapenos to bring the fruit back up because the coffee had really tamed it down. And he's like, what can I bring that's bright and acidic enough to bring it back up? And he's like, I used the jalapenos in the white wine. Let me try it in the red. And it was just really unique and interesting.
Maybe it's the Mad Dog 2020 that I've been drinking lately. You know, the kiwi strawberry is very, very nice.
The Boone's Farm that you've been drinking.
Yeah, speaking of jalapenos and kind of back to... franchise restaurants. I'll go into Wendy's occasionally for the spicy chicken sandwich, which is, I like it. You know, that's about the only thing I'll get there. And I haven't tried these, but they have ghost pepper fries there.
Yes. Yeah.
And now ghost pepper is the hottest.
Yeah, that's the correct? That's the new pepper out now.
The most Scoville's or whatever.
Yeah. Supposedly, if you eat it, just like the regular pepper, and it's a hybrid.
You will die.
Yeah, pretty much. it's pretty much inedible, but they do it in small doses now. Mm-hmm. I remember, back in the day that the habanero was the hottest pepper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and then, but now they've crossbred all these.
Has anybody tried those? Have you guys tried the ghost pepper fries?
I have not tried
Not there. I have, but I've had ghost peppers and other things in my capacity as the food editor at the Riverside Barbecue on Main Street in Nashua.
Yeah.
He has ghost peppers in a burger. It was fantastic, but I mean, I felt that for a solid half an hour.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It makes your lips go numb.
Everything. I mean, it's your whole, the whole area that has been touched by this ghost pepper is going down.
Yeah, that kind of ruins everything else about the meal. It's
you
so distracting, isn't it?
You have to be careful
with the hot peppers. When I was young, when I first started out and I had a chef I'm all cocky and coming out of a culinary school and I'm cutting these hot peppers and he's like, you might want to put some gloves on. I'm like, nah, I'm fine.
Oh, no.
So later on, I'm like this, I'm rubbing my eye and then I was like, go wash it. You wash up in the bathroom and then I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah,
from there,
and it gets really bad.
You guys ever try the jalapeno infused Lindt dark chocolate candy bars?
No,
I don't know if I've had that one. I've had the chili with the dark chocolate and there's a,
That's it. It's got the little red chili pepper.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh man,
that's
so
about
good.
As tame as that's a good tame version.
Mm-hmm.
And at the farmer's market in Nashua on the Sundays on the bridge on Main Street from 10 to 2, they have, local farmers and purveyors of foodstuffs. And they have a guy that brings honey. And one of the honeys has ghost pepper.
Oh.
And then he just amped it up now. It's ghost peppers and habanero. I'm like, are you trying to kill people? What are you doing?
Wow.
It's fantastic. I just put like that with cream cheese on
that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, honey, that's two things that go. The sweetness between the two.
Yeah.
At the Canterbury in Shaker Village, we have this artisan festival coming up in September. And there was one lady there that was doing honeys and she did lavender. And I think she had a chili infused honey. And it's just fantastic.
Chocolate, sweet and spicy
chocolate
is great.
Yeah, very definitely.
How is the farmer's market in Nashua?
It's getting bigger almost every week. It's Paul Shea, the guy in charge of Great American Downtown, is bringing. We went from like 10 last year to 20 this year. Vendors, they're now across the street in the little parking lot next to the building that used to be Saffron Bistro, and then there's all the tents on the bridge itself. There's farmers. There's the honey folks. There's the oil and vinegar guy. There's a few non-food related things at the farmer's market, but it's really cool. It's a nice, it's nice to keep your dollars in the community. And
it really is.
It's like a guy playing guitar and stuff.
Who's got one of the best farmer's markets in the region? It's a bit of a hike, is in St. Johnsbury, Vermont.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why. It's a Saturday, and I just like it a lot.
Wow.
It's really good. If you're ever up in that you know, White Mountains, just cross over the Connecticut River, and a couple miles in, you'll find it on a Saturday.
I remember growing up as a kid going to farmers markets. My father would go every Saturday, and growing up in the Pioneer Valley over in Western Mass, and you know, just stuff, because it's just such an agricultural area. I mean, I grew up picking cucumbers and corn and all sorts of stuff, but just getting to asparagus. That was the first thing, just rows of asparagus and coming right from the farmers market, and it was just excellent, you know. So, yeah.
Hey, Kath, has anybody gone into the old Villa Blanca building yet?
Yes.
Used to be Villa Blanca?
Yeah, about 3 weeks ago, Fratello's opened
a
satellite office, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the one in Nashua is now called Fratello's Italian Grill, and it's on the corner of East Pearl and Main Street in Nashua, obviously owned by our friends up here in Manchester as well. And it's fantastic. I did a review of the restaurant. There were air quotes there for you radio listeners. that came out in yesterday's Encore in the Telegraph. I air quoted it because I don't think anyone needs me to tell them that Fratello's is great. I mean, it's been around since 92 up in Laconia, 97 here in Manchester.
Lincoln, too, I think, has one.
Yeah, they have the homestead, too. It's a friend of mine, Mark McDonough, owns, and his brothers own
those.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, okay. So they know what they're doing.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But the Villa Blanca, former Villa Blanca restaurant location is great. It's right downtown. It's convenient for a lot of the stuff that we do in Nashua. Mm-hmm. We're going to have dinner and a movie on East Pearl Street, touching the Fratello's building. They're going to be one of the partners for the three movie and dinner nights. We close East Pearl Street, put up a big screen.
Nice.
And you can eat and drink outside and watch a classic movie.
They are awesome people. Like my daughters go to school with Mark McDonough's kids, and he's every function they have, he's catering it, and he does so much for the community. Really, really good guy.
Yeah.
And
cool.
Like you said, he knows what he's doing.
Right? How are the Michael Timothy places doing downtown?
They're great.
Still thriving.
I mean, I think that's the word I would use, is thriving. I mean, we've got Surf and MT's Local, and now we've got Fratello's. All three of those, you know, powerhouses right on Main Street. You know, it's really good food, and it's right downtown. And there's really no reason not to get down there. There's free parking after 7 p.m. for crying out loud.
Right, so you're reviewing, and you're not exactly anonymous, and you know your name.
Well,
is attached.
Well, I kind of. I mean, nobody's spotted me and pointed at me. And
but your name is on the byline of your reviews,
yes,
right?
Yes. Well, yes. After the fact, they know why.
How difficult is it to write a disparaging review, or you just choose not to put those?
You know, I don't write for Zagat's. So, I mean, I'm not writing for the Times. No, yeah. I'm nobody special. I enjoy fine dining.
So you find the good things about each one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not here to take anybody down. So if I really don't like a place, I have declined to review, I think, two restaurants.
Really?
I went to. Maybe three. Yeah, it was three restaurants.
Before or after the meal?
After the meal.
Okay.
I went to my boss and said, I'm sorry, I need you to reimburse me, but I cannot rewrite the review for this one. Because I don't feel like that's my vibe that I want to put
and
out.
And that's not the vibe of the Telegraph, which is why when I started writing 11, 12 years ago there, I liked the feel of the paper, the culture of it, and I felt that, you know, my style would match it.
Yeah.
You know,
and
that is the case. Now, of course, everything changes over time, and what a big change in the world of print has happened in the last, 15, 20 years, but for me, 11. So you've seen all that happening.
Yeah. There's less joy in Mudville lately.
Yeah. But you still have probably one of the best jobs at the paper, despite the fact
absolutely.
I mean, seriously, I mean, you work really hard.
I am a soft news gal by all accounts. I sit in the newsroom and I listen to that scanner and I listen to all the horrible things that are going on in the world, and then I just type up the theater review and just try and.
And you're a bit of a thespian yourself.
I'm a raging thespian.
You did a little stand-up comedy for an event, I think, that you hosted, a fundraiser. Is there any more of that on your plate?
Well, I would absolutely love to do that. I enjoyed it very much, and a lot of people seem to like it at the Telegraph event we had for our 30 Extraordinary Women. And I have to talk to my good friend Mike Morin, who does a lot of events. So let's see if I can ride his coattails. take some of the
I'll send him a text
extra,
for you.
Take some of his extra gigs off his hands that he's too busy to do.
Our time is up.
Oh,
with you.
See how that worked?
See how that
worked? I tried to take dollars out of his pocket.
Even though you signed up to me. I got news for you.
Mm-hmm.
There's no dollars going in on those events for the most part. Yeah. Kath Palmer of the Nashua Telegraph. Encore section, lifestyle, food editor.
All the fun stuff.
You got a big business card just
no
to
badness.
Say. No badness.
That's all my card says. Kathleen Bomber, no badness.
Well, we'll have you back another time.
Well, thank you.
You passed the audition.
Well, thank you. Can you get rid of that butter before I come back? Because it's terrifying.
It's been here at least 5 months, as far as I know. But I mean,
5 months, folks. There's butter on the counter here.
But it's still, nobody's touched it.
Mm.
And there's a good reason for
yes.
that, I suspect.
Know.
I'm afraid to open up the lid.
Yeah, please. Kath, thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Very
Mike.
Nice to meet you.
You too, Chef.
It is 1027. Well, it's 1027 probably somewhere in the world, but 127 Eastern. We'll be back with more Food for Thought. We're going to find out how the Beer Fest did. Granite State Brewers last weekend, they had a great turnout. How much do they make for New Horizons? We'll find out next on the Pulse 107.7 WTPL.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back, friends. It's 1:31 on the Pulse, 107.7 WTPL, Kale and Company. Kent Kale and his cast of his minions will be along in just a few. Our show brought to you by Mama McDonough's Irish Pub, 5 Depot Street in Hillsborough. Come find your Irish side. And Integrity Health Coaching Solutions, Bedford, Londonderry, and soon coming to North Conway. It is 1:31. In just a couple of moments, we'll be talking to Grant Welker, who writes for the Lowell Sun, which is pretty much ground zero of Market Basket, their actual headquarters at Tewksbury, which is the town just one south of there. And he has put together a pretty interesting look at what happened last year when all the ugliness happened and RDT and RDS were going at it and the company nearly went out of business. We're going to find out just how close that call was in just a couple of moments. I want to say hello to Bill Herlicka, who is on the phone. He is the founder and head of White Birch Brewing, located in Hooksett. And believe it or not, formerly my next door neighbor. Yet all the years I lived there, I never met the guy.
I would have been over his house every day.
Well, you know, I need to make up for lost time at
there
some point. But he's president of the Granite State Brewers Association. Bill, how are you this afternoon? Well, if Bill could hear me. Oh, all right. So I'm gonna send you the phone number to call, which perhaps I didn't give you earlier, which is my bad. So carry on for about 30 seconds.
So here's my story about, you know, we were talking about water and we were talking about beer. So so my thought in my head, so we're talking about, you know, the poor quality water. So that's how beer came about. So, you know, back in the day when water quality was so poor, people used to have to boil the water, you know, in order to keep bacteria, because they used to, you know, throw their waste out, you know, on the ground and all sorts of stuff. So the water quality was poor. So you'd get water and they'd boil it, except for, you know, it'd kill the bacteria, but the flavor of the water would be poor. So,
what era are we talking about now?
Probably 1600s, you know, probably even before. I'm sure way before that, you know. But so they would boil the water in order to make it potable, and then, but the flavor would be off. So they'd add malt to it. So then it would taste better, but then it wouldn't last that long. So then they started adding hops, and so we got beer. So that's my little story about my little knowledge about beer.
You know, that would make a very nice bedtime story for a 3-year-old.
I thought it was great.
Bill Herlicka is on the phone right now, and it was my mistake not giving our producer the phone number. I guess by hypnosis, I thought he would know, or osmosis, or whatever the word is. Hey, Bill, good afternoon. Thanks for coming on for a few minutes today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mike. It's great to be here.
Bill Herlicka.
How you doing?
Hey, there we go. I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
TGIF.
Amen, brother.
Yes.
How are things at White Birch Brewing in lovely Hooksett, New Hampshire today?
You know, the usual. Making beer, packaging beer, selling beer.
I'm very envious.
This is Chef Patrick Hall from up in the Lakes region. He's an instructor at Lakes Region Community College, and I just found out he is a beer guy. So, I should put you two together sometime. But, Bill, I wanted to find out how you did with last weekend's Summerfest. I know that last year you made a really big contribution to New Horizons, and it looks like you had more people coming into the tent this year. So how did that turn out for you?
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal. The partnership with the New Horizons team, Spectrum Marketing, and many other wonderful sponsors. We saw about 50% increase in paying attendees this year. We had about 1,200 people this year, which was awesome as paying ticket holders. Between the brewers, friends of the brewers, and some of the sponsors, plus the road race, which was the first year ever, I think we had a total of about 1,500 people this year.
Wow.
And yeah. What would you say it was, 900 last year, somewhere in that neighborhood?
Yeah.
Wow. So you wrote a check out to New Horizons. Have you come up with the final amount for that donation?
Well, last year, once all the costs finally came in and everything settled, we wrote a check for $11,000 last year.
Sure.
Right now, I'm waiting to get any straggling bills. Most of them have been paid.
Right.
You know, you'd be amazed at how long it takes to get bills on some of these things. But this year, we're looking not quite double that number, but you know, I'd say we're right around the $16,000 to $18,000 range, depending on anything else that may come in.
Well, that's fantastic! Congratulations on an event that has clearly resonated with craft beer drinkers in New Hampshire. Much of the growth coming over the last couple of years. So here's the question, speaking of growth, you know, what are you going to do next year? Because I'm guessing, I wasn't there, but you probably need to expand, or is the venue big enough? What are you going to do for your third one?
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing. We're having some post meetings with the board of the Granite State Brewers Association, as well as the Summerfest board, which is Peter Telge of Millie's Tavern. He's the chair, myself, as president of the GSBA, and then New Horizons and Spectrum. One of the members of the Fest Board thinks we should move inside to a bigger venue next year. If you've never been to Arms Park, it's right along the Merrimack River, cuts through the center of Manchester. We haven't even used half of the space that the city would allow us. So there's always the option of fencing off a larger area, getting two tents set up inside. We had a 60 by 100 foot tent this year. You know, we could put two of those up, have two different sections of brewers, you know, maybe a southern New Hampshire and the North Country, you know, or Seacoast, and then everybody else that lives in the rest of New Hampshire.
Yeah, right.
A lot of ways we could do it.
You were talking about bringing in a keg or a barrel of one particular beer that it was the last batch of it, and how quickly did you go through that? I don't recall the name of it.
Our sixth anniversary beer didn't last for a half hour. You know, and my blueberry Berliner Weiss, I brought a couple of those. Those made it to 2 o'clock. We went through four kegs of our watermelon wheat, the small batch watermelon wheat. What was kind of a nice thing for me is you go to a fest, and it's usually people talking about the hoppiest beer they can find. And I had people talking about not only the brand-new brewers from wherever they came from, but I heard a number of people actually talking about fruit beer as being good. I'm like, beer can be more than just one style of beer. And it's awesome, you know. I mean, you hang out by the gate, people are chatting, hey, did you have a good time? Oh, it was awesome. What'd you try? Oh, I tried the stuff from, you know, this brewery, that brewery. I mean, you know, we had people from everywhere here today.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have any time left. I wanted to just at least touch base with you, see how things went, and congratulate you on what I know was another out-of-the-park event for you guys, and hope that it goes as good or better next year, and have you on again from time to time during the year, because we're all discovering craft beer, even somebody like me who knew very little bit about it, and which is weird that you didn't rub off on me as my former next-door neighbor.
Well, you know, there's always the opportunity today. Or tomorrow for a beer, right?
That's for sure. The Herlick of White Birch Brewing and president of the Granite State Brewers Association. Thank you for taking a few minutes out. Now go back and make some more good stuff, will you?
Well, thanks for having me on. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. All right, Bill. Take care.
Bye.
All right. It's 1:40 on the pulse. We're going to come back on the other side. Grant Welker is standing by. His book, We Are Market Basket, the story of the unlikely grassroots movement that saved a beloved business. When we continue on Food for Thought, Mike Moore and Carol Lawrence is back on Monday. Chef Patrick Hall is here as well, helping out on 107.7 The Pulse. Hang on. Coming right back.
for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
It's Food for Thought, 145, 107.7 WTPL. Next up on the show, Food for Thought, is Grant Welker. He's a writer for the Lowell Sun, 17-time Journalism Award winner, along with Daniel Korshin, wrote a book about the incredible story that unfolded locally last year. His book is We Are Market Basket, the story of the unlikely grassroots movement that saved a beloved business. Grant, welcome. All right, so how closely did Market Basket as a company come to totally going out of business?
It seemed very close. Being a private company, we don't know their finances, but from what we could guess in talking to business experts, it kept seeming like they were right at the brink at any point of having to go under. And it really made it so tense, such a tense summer, kind of waiting to see if this long-beloved company that's been around almost 100 years was going to go under just like that because of this whole fight.
All right, so money aside, how much of the RDS versus RDT battle was personal and ego-driven, do you think?
Yeah, some of it was related to ego or to bad blood between the two sides of the family going back several decades. Part of it was also, I think, different business philosophies. You have the Arthur T. side, who he loves to treat the employees well. They get profit sharing and bonuses. He makes a point of learning all of the employees' names and knowing their families. And you have the other side who really prioritized profit margins and returns for shareholders and operating more like a typical corporation. And between the bad blood and I think those different philosophies, you really had a situation where it was bound to come to a head at some point.
All right, so you did in the neighborhood of 70 stories over the course of this, I guess, this challenging time for the company. How available were RDT and RDS to the media and to you personally?
You know, they actually weren't too available. you know, Arthur T., his style is that he doesn't really reach out to the media too much. He doesn't seek the spotlight or want to have it. And the Arthur S. side, you know, they never responded to me either in my reporting for The Sun or in us reaching out to them for the book. In fact, one of these, it became kind of infamous, I don't know if you'd call it an interview really, but Arthur S. Was asked by a Boston TV reporter last summer at one point to respond to everything going on, and his reaction was kind of just you know, can you get out of my way or something like that? So it became a little bit difficult to tell their side, although we did learn what some of their issues were with Arthur T through court filings. And that's where it goes to, you know, the issue of profit margins and wanting it to run kind of more like a typical corporation with more oversight on what Arthur T was doing. And that was mostly it.
Let's bring this down to a more, I guess, personal level in terms of the hourly employees. They were ready to literally empty their meager savings accounts if it meant bringing RDT back. True?
They were. Yeah. That's what made it really incredible is they felt so strongly about it, they were willing to put their job on the line. And many people I talked to said they almost felt like they had nothing to lose because the market basket that they loved was at risk. And if Arthur T wasn't there, it wasn't going to be the same market basket anymore. And it wasn't going to be the job that they loved. So from the at least dozens or hundreds of employees that we heard from, there was a little hesitancy that they were willing from the get-go to put their jobs on the line.
Do you think this whole thing could have succeeded had customers not stayed away in droves by shopping elsewhere, even if it meant they had to pay more at, say, Hannaford or Shaw's?
I don't think it ever would have worked. No, I think that was the whole critical component is that loyal kind of cult-like following that Market Basket has to shoppers is they sided with the employees pretty much unanimously. About 90% of their sales were gone last summer. And as you said, if people were willing to go to Stop and Shop or Shaw's or Hannaford, and pay more, uproot their habits. And in many cases, we saw people would actually take their receipts after going to one of those competitors. They'd go back to their nearest market basket and tape their receipt from one of the competitors up on the front windows.
I remember that.
That made for a great image. It's hard to imagine customers of those other chains doing something like that, or even, you know, if you think of, auto workers walking off the line, could you imagine that, Chevrolet or Ford customers saying that they'll buy a different car now because they want to stand with the workers? It's such a unique thing. It's hard to imagine many other scenarios that could have had customers siding with employees like that.
That's a really good analogy because I grew up in Detroit, so I totally get that comparison. All right, so we're talking with Grant Welker, wrote a book called We Are Market Basket, the story of the unlikely grassroots movement that saved a beloved business, along with Daniel Korshan. Grant, how did social media play a part in creating momentum toward creating a win for the workers?
It played a very big role, actually, which is kind of ironic considering they don't even have a website themselves, Market Basket. And a lot of the key managers said that they really had no familiarity with social media much at all. But it did reach that point where, they could put something out on Twitter or Facebook or on a website that they created. They could say, all right, we're rallying in the Tewksbury store, say 10 a.m. on Monday, whenever it was. And just like that, they would have thousands of people show up. And that was really critical. They were able to sort of, kind of get a feel for how each other, other people were thinking about the rallies at that point. It was very important.
Clearly, you're not the only media person who was finding great interest in reporting and documenting all this. Food Fight Inside the Battle for Market Basket, the documentary, will be out a little later this year, and was embraced by contributors to their Kickstarter fund campaign to the tune of $66,000. That's not easy to do.
No, it's not. Yeah, we and Daniel and I were both interviewed by Jay for that documentary. He did a great job with it. That just shows, again, the immense interest that people have in the story, I think. And we've seen that with our book sales early so far. People in this area, they love Market Basket. They love Demoulas. People still call it Demoulas often, even though it hasn't had that name for a few decades anyway. There's not much else like it.
Did this episode of Discord get the attention, do you think, of other privately owned, similar family businesses?
I don't know if we've seen many cases necessarily of that, although, you do see, even since last summer, a lot of large companies, Walmart and McDonald's, have talked about raising their minimum wages. Just in the last few weeks, Hillary Clinton has mentioned Market Basket as an example for the benefits of profit sharing, and she's talked about tax breaks for such businesses. I think it's still out there. I think there are a lot of lessons to be taken from it. We talk about it in the book. If you're a CEO of a company and you were to be fired, would your employees walk out for you? And if the answer is yes or no, I think that probably says something about the job you're doing. And there are a lot of lessons to be learned in management and public relations and things like that from the story.
Final question, Grant. Has the Harvard Business School written a syllabus yet for a course on this unprecedented turn of events?
I don't know if they have, but it has been, it was debated at a forum at MIT last fall, and we do know UMass Lowell has talked about it, and Daniel's included it in his courses at Drexel. I think as time goes on, it'll definitely become a powerful real-life lesson for people in business.
Well, if that happens, do you know anybody that could provide textbooks for that course?
Yeah, I sure do.
Grant Welker, along with Daniel Korshan, writing a book, and I can't wait to read it. We Are Market Basket, the story of the unlikely grassroots movement that saved a beloved business. From the Lowell Sun, Grant Welker, thanks for taking time today on Food for Thought.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, Chef Patrick, what surprises me, and I haven't gone online to see, does Market Basket not have a website? They must.
I've never even tried to look at it, but
no.
It's devastating when that all happened, because I shop there all the time, you know, for school.
Sure.
And, I mean, the shelves were bare, you know, so.
Yeah, the movie is coming out. It's called Food Fight Inside the Battle for Market Basket. This guy has nothing to do with that, but... clearly, a lot of interest, and it should be pretty compelling viewing when that happens. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having
filling
me
in today, and inviting you back next Thursday.
Yeah.
Not only for your normal segment, for the entire show to co-host.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'll be in. You know, so
great. Kara Lawrence is here on Monday, back in her usual spot. I'll be on the other side of the studio, letting her do all the blood, sweat, and tears work. I'm Mike Moore, and have a wonderful weekend. Food for thought on the Pulse 107.7 WTPL. Take care.